All right, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Cinephiles Extended Cut, the show where we break down the biggest stories of the week as covered by WatchMojo's The Cinephiles, as well as some other big stories that didn't quite make the cut. So if you like this, be sure to subscribe to Mojo Talks for more. Guys, welcome. Thanks for joining. As usual, Justin.
Hey.
Phoebe. And a very special panelist. We got Manny here replacing Liam. Manny, how's it going?
Thanks, guys. I wore my denim shirt to honor Liam and his denim shirt wearingness. So I'm really proud of that.
I love that.
I keep him close to me every day.
You know what? If we went back and checked out all the episodes, he's probably wearing a denim shirt in all of them.
I feel like it's his unspoken signature.
His thing. Yeah. Right.
It's all about branding, man.
It's all about branding.
So Manny, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to have
you here, man. So guys, we're going to start off with what you're watching like we do every week. This is where we go around and ask you what you've seen on the big screen or at home. Doesn't matter. Let's start with Justin. What have you been watching, my friend?
Watched two movies in the theater this week.
In the theater.
Saw the new Blumhouse picture, Truth or Dare. Which I described earlier as It Follows but dumber. And it's basically that. It's a PG-13 Final Destination's style movie where the cast is slowly killed off one by one, but none of the deaths are very memorable or even that gory or interesting. So that was a bit of a letdown. I also saw A Quiet Place, and
nice.
That was excellent. Very good movie.
Great.
It's funny because I think I said this last week, like Truth or Dare. I was like, this does not look good to me at all. And I realized that they even have like Blumhouse in the title of the movie where it's like Blumhouse's Truth or Dare. And it's like if Blumhouse had to do that, then it might have been a sign it wasn't very good.
It's kind of a sign of like maybe the name Blumhouse is carrying more stake these days than it used to. People are maybe coming out to see it because it's a Blumhouse movie.
Yeah.
But when I went to see it, the marquee wasn't long enough for the whole title of the movie, so it literally just said Blumhouses outside the theater, and I was like, well, that's interesting.
Amazing. Yeah. Phoebe, what have you been watching?
I was lucky enough to see Super Troopers 2 this
lucky
week.
Lucky enough? Is
How
that
fortunate
really?
Of you.
Yes, I was
the
lucky.
No,
it was good. We did a review that's coming out today, Mojo at the Movies, so you
Get
guys
that plug in.
All check it out. Yeah, no, it was fine. I mean, like, if you like the first movie, sort of like stoner cult film, you're going to like the second one. It's filled with some funny jokes, and there's a lot of problems with it, but it's good. It's fine.
And if you didn't like the first one?
Then maybe don't even go see this.
I did not like the first one, so I'll steer clear probably.
Don't watch it then.
Thanks. Thanks for that, though. Good review. Good review. Manny, what about you, my friend?
I've been watching a lot of stuff. My fiance's been sick, so I haven't left the house. So I've been watching everything that came out on the DVD this week or like in the past weeks or whatever was on Digital Down. So I rewatched Black Panther.
Nice.
I rewatched The Shape of Water.
Yes.
I caught the actually on Liam again. I will mention him.
Liam
told me, "Hey, The Nice Guys got added on Netflix," and I'm like, "You know what? That was a great movie." So I rewatched that.
I watched that too. That's so random.
Yeah,
I watched
it's
the other
really
day.
Funny. I think.
Oh my god, you guys!
Overall,
it's so scary. It's so freaky.
Overall, they do a really good job in that movie. It's really fun. I mean, it's a Shane Black movie, so it's great. Russell Crowe's great. Ryan Gosling, and I rewatched Lucky Number 11.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like it's a little bit of a forgotten gem. It's a fun, good revenge movie. A lot of comedy in it. I don't remember it being that funny. and Bruce Willis making some easy money. I think he said like 5 lines of dialogue and was in like 4 frames of the movie. So
that's
like
good for him.
Yeah, that's an A-lister's dream. It's like, oh, big paycheck and I don't have to memorize lines.
Yeah. And it looked like he was reading them off camera because like his eyes were constantly shifting. Which was really funny, actually. I'm like, I never noticed that before.
That's
and
hilarious.
Josh Hartnett. Kind of missed the guy. You know, like
really?
Where
that's
you at,
interesting.
Josh Hartnett? You know,
I don't
like,
think I've heard
Dreadful.
That.
Cool, but like
oh, he
movies.
Is in that.
Yeah.
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 Like,
I was going to say, I haven't heard that name in literally like 10 years probably or something.
Big time.
Yeah, it's been a while.
He's, I feel he deserves another go ahead. I miss the guy. Good actor. Fun
Interesting.
Times. Fun times.
That's cool. You have a ton of time to watch all these movies, Manny.
Yeah.
Especially
like,
with your girlfriend sick. Are you actually helping her? Or you mean you're hiding in a room watching movies to avoid
to avoid the plague, you know?
Like
No, you know, it's emotional support, I call it. It's like, hey, do you want to watch this movie? So she picks a movie. Falls asleep, and then I watch whatever I want.
Mm.
So,
gotcha.
I'm taking notes right now. This is
Take
a good,
notes.
Good strategy.
Yeah. That's how
to
it
those
works.
In relationships.
To those in relationships, when your SO is sick, let them pick the movie. They will eventually fall asleep. Then you can watch whatever you want.
That's amazing. Okay, so that was our What You Watching segment. Coming up next is the top three stories of the week. So we're going to get to that real soon, guys. And we're back. This is a segment where we talk about the three biggest stories of the week. So we're going to start things off with Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, the latest Jurassic Park film. They released the last trailer. And, you know, it looks good, but it also looks incredibly familiar in the sense that it, like, borrows a lot from its predecessors. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think that's the general consensus.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem like they're really doing anything new with it. You guys have watched it, obviously. When I saw it, I was like, man, this just reminds me 100% of The Lost World, where mm-hmm. they go back to this island and they're like, oh, let's get all these dinosaurs and bring them back to the mainland and, you know, make money from it.
I even feel like the first Jurassic World, again, was just like a fun fan film rehash of the first one.
Right, yeah.
There was nothing original there. And I thought the CGI was great, but then again, it came out 2 years ago, so I expect the CGI to be great. So when people use, like, the CGI is amazing, well, I hope so. You know, it also had a $150 million budget. It should be good. Like, I should believe that there's a dinosaur there.
Yeah.
I'm not looking forward to it. I'll probably catch it when it comes out on, you know, Blu-ray or digital download. I don't think I'm going to rush into the theater to watch it. I mean, we've seen it, right? So
I mean,
also, one of the first sequels Spielberg ever did was The Lost World. True. So,
And
while you might not be rushing into theaters, a lot of people will, because this movie is going to make a boatload of cash.
It's not exactly like everybody's going, I wonder what Manny thinks about the movie.
Yeah. They should, though.
You know what?
They should.
I should wait for it.
I'm going to wait, I think. No, but the first one, like, set records and was just a total smash hit. So, I mean, sequels tend to build on the success of the originals in terms of box office pull.
Oh, for sure.
So that just leads me to believe that this movie is just going to set even more records, which, you know.
Yeah.
They spent enough money to warrant that, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I hope so. And it's cool that Chris Pratt is like a cool blockbuster actor now.
I agree.
Humble beginnings and then like...
Very humble beginnings.
From sitcom schlub, as we like to say.
I think what's really interesting about this movie that it looks like a horror movie. Like, it's being marketed as if it's like a horror movie. And the first one was like so fun and light. And this trailer was like so dark, I found.
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
Even aesthetically, it was just like really, really dark. And like, you know, it's like scary. Like, there's like a hand to the bed. Like, it was creepy. Like, I don't know. I'm excited to see it. I will rush to the theater to see it because I like the first one so much.
And it's like, it's extra creepy because it's like a little kid in the bed too. Yeah. And there's just like that dark claw that comes. Yeah. And this dinosaur, for some reason, has like really bad teeth. They're like brown already. And it's like they just created it. It's like,
hasn't been
pretty
flossing.
Terrifying. Yeah. So I guess.
Shit, I think you guys just changed my mind. Maybe I will go see it in the theater.
You gotta listen to us, man.
I know.
Or at least
I usually
Phoebe.
Don't.
Phoebe sold it pretty good
I think it's
on
Phoebe.
That pitch.
Phoebe,
yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I guess this is like my main question for you guys is, will this just be another half-hearted sequel that we've come to know through like all these movie franchises? Phoebe, I get the sense that she doesn't quite think so, but let's just go around and maybe go a little bit more in depth. Justin.
Yeah, I don't think this will be all too different from what we've come to expect from these big blockbuster sequels. That being said, I do like the idea of changing it up in terms of tone, and the trailer does seem to do that a little bit, but it remains to be seen whether or not that's the case for the picture as a whole.
That's
so,
the thing.
Yeah. I reserve judgment.
We do know that trailers at times can be misleading.
Absolutely.
So it could just be like those scenes picked are literally like the scariest horror movie type ones. Maybe they even make the scenes darker. They're just like, oh, let's make it darker for the trailer.
Wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if that was the case.
Yeah. I'm going to throw it to Manny because Phoebe seems like she wants to see it. So we're going to maybe hopefully end it on kind of a positive note. So let's throw it to Manny because we know he's gonna caca all over this probably. So let's go,
well,
Manny.
There was a time where we thought the Suicide Squad was going to be a promising great movie based on the marketing materials.
I'm going to interrupt you for 2 seconds. That's an Academy Award winning film, my friend.
You know what? Which is shocking to me. Because it went up against Star Trek, the third Star Trek.
Yeah, that's true.
Not a memorable film, but the makeup was much better in that movie. Yeah. It's like, I didn't even know Idris Elba was in it. Till I like
Idris Elba's in it.
Yeah, he's the main baddie.
Exactly.
I was like,
it was good.
So, you know what? Marketing, it's job is to get you in the theater.
Yeah.
It's a big title. Again, I guess, I don't know, maybe Phoebe changed my mind. Maybe I'll go see this in theater. Yeah. Is it probably going to be a rehash? Look, man, they do it in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. For some people, nobody's allowed to criticize. For some reason, nobody's allowed to criticize that, right? But Avengers 2 is Avengers 1.
Interesting.
And that's kind of why people don't like that movie, though, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Aside from James Spader's like awesome performance as Ultron, that's it. The movie's exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Mind control. Again. New members. Again.
Big mindless army of...
One guy dies. Again. And then it's like, hey, CGI bad guys, got it. Yeah. Sky beam?
Check.
No. Three beams into the bad guy at the end.
Hey, if it works.
Three. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Phoebe, you have to rescue this for everyone who is wanting to see this, everyone who is a huge Jurassic Park fan.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of
pressure.
You
got to swing for the fences.
Well, I mean, listen, like I know not to expect too much from sequels of blockbusters, but I think like I pick and choose based on what I find interesting. And I really, really enjoyed Chris Pratt in the first one in Jurassic World. So I'm deciding to be excited for this film. So that's it. That's all I have to say.
I will say that there are like a good number of scenes where I was like, oh, that looks pretty sick. Like when they're surfing on the wave and that giant, like the I guess it was the alligator dinosaur or whatever from the first one
is like swimming in the wave. And I was like, so sick.
Ooh, damn.
It will be entertaining. That's 100% sure.
I think we can all agree.
I like dinosaurs, so.
Yeah, it's going to be like your quintessential popcorn flick where it's very entertaining. But maybe doesn't bring anything necessarily new to the table.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just going to lower my expectations for all films.
That's it. Wow. Just in general.
I'm also kind of excited to see how Jeff Goldblum plays into this.
I forgot.
He had that like one little epic line at the end of the trailer. Welcome to Jurassic World.
It's a pretty good Goldblum.
That is a good Goldblum.
The key is just to stutter before every like third word.
It's more of a hesitation. It's like I'm just gonna be very extra careful before I get into this next one. Yeah, I love that.
But I'm interested because he seemed to be like in a courtroom or something, or like addressing, I don't know, higher ups of some sort. Mm-hmm. So like, what role does he play? Very interesting.
I think he's gonna attract like a slew of women for some reason. All of a sudden, he's just like back in the public consciousness is like a heartthrob.
He's kind of made a resurgence. Thor Ragnarok had a lot to do with that, I think.
I'm hoping for another Jeff Goldblum like lying across a steel table without a shirt like this,
please.
I feel like we're due.
They made a Funko Pop of that.
The culture needs it.
Really?
From the first Jurassic Park, there's actually check it out, guys, there's amazing. A Funko Pop on that. Okay, so we're gonna shift gears just a little bit. We're gonna talk about we talked about this just before. Harley Quinn, Suicide Squad.
Oh,
she's probably the reason why they won the Academy Award. Everyone's just like, oh, yeah, Harley Quinn wore makeup.
Yeah, there was makeup on that actress.
That she did.
They dyed the ends of her hair.
Yeah, exactly. And not even
a little too much mascara.
So Harley Quinn, yes. They're going to make a standalone or spinoff movie, DC as that is. And they think they've found their director in Cathy Yan. Yay. And if you guys don't know who she is, it probably makes sense because she only has done one movie prior to this, and it actually premiered this year at Sundance. It was called Dead Pigs. And I don't even think it has like a distributor yet, so it would make sense that no one's really heard of this. So I guess what my question is for you, while like I personally, I'm sure it's the same for you guys, I commend DC and actually going out to find like a woman director to tell a story of like a woman's story, but is she too inexperienced to tackle such a big budget superhero film? Because if she is to land this, she's going to be the first Asian American woman to direct a big budget superhero film.
Let me counter your point with another point, saying that if it was a male director, you would never ask that question.
You know what? I would.
I don't think that, not you, but like I don't think that people would bat an eye at it. You know what I mean? And like
that's an interesting point.
That you need to take chances on, newer filmmakers, which is what we were saying last week in our discussion about Netflix, about, you know, newer filmmakers gravitating to this sort of streaming platform because they don't get the opportunity to direct big blockbusters or, you know, widely distributed films.
Right.
To speak to a female director in the DC universe, obviously Wonder Woman came out, it was in 2016, it came out
2017.
Patty
Jenkins.
That movie, as a woman, It really, really touched me because it was so nice to see myself represented in the superhero genre. And I think that that speaks to Black Panther coming out. You know, the Black community finally is seeing a superhero mm-hmm. that reflects them and their culture. Mm-hmm. And I can't even imagine what that feels like for them. So it's amazing for me to be able to experience that again. And I'm not necessarily attracted to a Harley Quinn film, you know, like I didn't even see Suicide Squad because I don't care about it. But it just makes me really, really excited that, you know, women are more present in the universes.
Yeah. And I will just jump in quickly and say, like, yes, she is inexperienced. She's only done one feature film before. But I forget what exactly the award was. But she did win, like, I think a couple awards at Sundance for this film. So maybe inexperienced, but clearly talented.
That's it.
Justin, you want to say something?
Well, there is a bit of a trend in Hollywood now where coming out of a small independent picture, these directors will be picked up for big projects. Like
this is true.
Coming out of Safety Not Guaranteed is how, I'm blanking on the director's name, but he went on to direct Jurassic World.
Mm. Colin Trevorrow.
Colin Trevorrow, and then he was also given Star Wars, which didn't work out. He was let go from that project. Yeah. But based off one indie, they were basically like, oh, you can direct these massive pictures. And like Jurassic World is a record-setting film, and it's his first big budget movie. Yeah. The same could be said of like a Josh Trank who made Chronicle, and then after that was given Fantastic Four again.
I believe it's Fanforstic.
Fanforstic, sorry. Which, as we all know, was a huge hit.
That movie touched me as a filmmaker.
That's right. Yeah,
I was like, these are all the mistakes I made at school. Yeah. Immortalized forever. Amazing.
I think that's a good thing in the long run to be able to see potential in a director's work and mm-hmm. say like, let's see what you got. Here's a bunch of money. And mm-hmm. and ultimately, like, I think that's a smart decision from the studio's perspective because maybe they don't have to pay the director as much as maybe someone who has a lot more experience in the...
Good point. But then you get into the other sticky situation of, like, females in cinema not being paid
that's the other thing.
Their owed and deserved.
Absolutely,
you know?
The case.
Yeah, that's another conversation.
Yeah, entirely.
That's a big one, yeah.
But, you know, Dead Pigs sounds like a movie that Harley Quinn would make. Like, that's like, so maybe there is like a kind of tonal, I don't know, I know nothing about this movie, Dead Pigs, but maybe there's a tonal similarity between the subject matter. I'm not sure.
I don't think so. I think basically what the gist of the movie is there's this like area of land that I think this like business, I don't know if it's a business, but they're trying to buy up all the land, and this woman, all her neighbors are like selling their houses, the houses are being demolished, and she's the only one who has a house left in this spot.
It's
just kind of like a standoff type situation.
Interesting.
People will come out in droves to see a Harley Quinn movie, so I think
that's it. Yeah,
and it could potentially be good. I mean, DC's track record of female driven movies so far, one for one.
Yeah, one for one.
One for one.
Yeah. So that's pretty good.
Manny, I'm going to throw to you. What do you think, my friend? Is she too inexperienced? Are you looking forward to it? Do you think it's a good call?
I think depending on the scale of this movie, I think it went from Gotham City Sirens to now being called Birds of Prey.
Yeah. That's what I think.
I think, and for me, it's like, really, what's the scale of this movie going to be should depend on if this director would be qualified or not. I mean, like, if you look at the guy who directed Spider-Man Homecoming, my name escapes him because I didn't bring my notes. he did a lot of indie films before, and they gave him a huge platform like Spider-Man to work with. Mm-hmm. And he did a great job. Patty Jenkins as well never really tackled a huge blockbuster before. Excuse me. And
fine. Don't worry about it.
Just the fact of her, she excelled in Wonder Woman after. I think if a director is good, doesn't matter what it's going to be, the movie will be fine. Mm-hmm. I think this is more a reflection on, is Warner Brothers going to give this director the free rein to work the way she's comfortable?
Yeah.
Or are we taking an inexperienced director, man or woman, throwing them into already a disastrous situation over there at Warner Brothers in DC?
That's a good
point. So it's really, really comes out to, is Warner Brothers going to kind of pull back, tone down on the budget and tone down on the meddling, and really let the DC people do their thing, kind of like a bit how Marvel Studios and then was bought out by Disney, but then they always have a baseman, which is Kevin Feige, who is kind of like, hey guys, step off. We kind of know what we're doing. I think we're sending you the checks that you need, so that everybody just calm down.
Right.
Experienced or inexperienced, if you're a good director, knowing from
well, basically from experience and working on different projects where I've had, you know, $1,000 an episode to $5,000 an episode. It really doesn't matter how much money you have. It really depends. Can you handle this type of project that's put before
you?
And maybe they see something that us on the surface don't see. Maybe there's potential in this filmmaker. Maybe she will become the next big filmmaker to make one of these movies work. Personally, I think Harley Quinn is not a great character to put in the forefront of a movie. I think she works. She's well written. Paul Dini created her as a throwaway character back in the 90s. And then she kind of evolved into the comics. And then he did it again with Batman Beyond. So
yeah.
Is this really a, do they want to build, is this their next quote unquote Wonder Woman? You know, psychotic ex-doctor.
Not as easy to look up to.
Who's also a villain. I mean, you use Wonder Woman as an example. This is the best thing. It's like, oh, it's like, I love police officers. I don't also love Charles Manson. You know what I mean?
That, those are good points. That's fair. And I also, I also really like your points about like the directing itself. It's like, it's not necessarily a question of vision and like artisticness, if you will. It's like she's going to go from a movie where, I don't know, let's say, I don't know what the budget is, but I don't, I assume it can't be more than $1 million. So let's say, like, I don't know, $500,000 to make this movie. And then all of a sudden your next film is going to be something that commands something like multi-million, you know, like $20 million budget or something like that. That's a tough thing to just like kind of gauge your budget and stuff like that. So that's an interesting point.
And also overseeing twice the amount of team, twice the amount of people. And usually these movies don't work on just a domestic level, right? So they'll shoot some stuff in New York and they'll come down to Canada and shoot some more stuff. And then it's like, oh, we're sending it out to for color grading out to Quebec. And then it's like, there's a lot of steps here that I know a lot of people, a lot of filmmakers, when they get a huge budget movie like this, they're not expected to, unless they kind of, like, this may sound bad, they just want to put her name on it and then the suits will kind of take care of everything in the foreground. So if it fails, they just play the inexperienced director card, sorry we gave everything, kind of like what they did with Colin Trevorrow, what was his name, the guy who did the Chronicle.
Josh Trank.
Yeah, Josh Trank. They were like, oh well, he was inexperienced, which I think he was a great filmmaker. And the fact that they tried to alienate him as he was inexperienced, kind of like we saw a side of that filmmaker that maybe we didn't know before, but he was very angry, very bitter, justified because a lot of studio interference.
I feel like this
is another one of those situations where hopefully, I hope everything goes good for her. This will make her career if it does work. And I look forward to seeing her movie so I could see what I can expect in this one.
Likewise, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a perfect note to jump to the next story, guys. So we're going to talk about another sequel. Or you know what? Actually, no. Maybe potentially not. Mad Max took the movie world by storm in, what was it, 2015? Killed it at the Oscars. Made a ton of money. It was basically everyone's favorite movie that year. And deservedly so. It was amazing. But some interesting stories, if you will, have come out from this. Kennedy Miller Mitchell, sorry, is the production company. It's George Miller's company. According to him, in the contracts with Warner Brothers, there was like a stipulation where they said, oh, if you make the movie for under this amount of dollars, you're going to get a bonus of $9 million US. And according to Miller, he did achieve that. But Warner Brothers is saying, oh, no, the budget was actually this, so you're not getting it. So there's a huge lawsuit going on right now, and it's been going on since basically the film wrapped, and it's basically made a mess of any possible sequel that could happen, because this is your production company, this is your distributor, you're going to war with them, and you know George Miller already has Mad Max 5 and 6 scripts ready. But, I mean, all of that is clearly on hold until this lawsuit is settled with. So, my question to you guys is the Mad Max franchise movie, is the Mad Max franchise over? And can the working relationship between the two companies be restored? What do we think? Manny, I'll throw it to you.
This comes down to, like, you're working at a job, they sharked you your Christmas bonus. But yet they're...
Oh, boy. We all rely on that, right?
$9 million Christmas bonus.
So they shark you your Christmas bonus.
Yeah.
But they're also telling you, we're going to keep you working here for the next 4 years. and we're going to give you more money and more opportunities to create the projects you want to create.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you didn't really achieve bonus status for this year. So for me, it comes down to I'm fighting for $9 million when I can say, all right, you guys fleeced me on my $9 million. I want 2% box office return on Mad Max, the other two sequels,
yeah,
right? And you're going to end up making $50-20 million. So for me, this is kind of like, I love George Miller. He comes from the indie background,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and then all of a sudden made this gigantic blockbuster and blew us all away. And also Happy Feet.
Can't forget about Happy Feet.
Yes.
And Babe 2, Pig in the City.
Oh my God, Babe! Babe.
The better of the Babe movies.
The better of the Babe movies. For me, it comes down to take the $9 million hit. You're not exactly hurting for money. Make another two Mad Max movies, because mm-hmm, we all want to see more Tom Hardy saying nothing and being angry all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we want to see some explosions. We want to see some fire and, you know, just say I want more to direct the next ones and balance okay out the $9 million. Like,
interesting.
For me, it really comes down to like, you really wanna bury this at this point?
That's interesting. See, this is spoken like a true businessman here.
Yeah.
Is anyone? I'll leave it to you. Does anyone think that George Miller is in the right here for gunning what's owed to him?
He had a contract, right?
Yeah,
that's right.
They broke the contract.
Legally binding.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, if you're saying that this person comes from like an indie background, then like it's cool to see him like, you know, standing up. To the man.
Yeah.
You know, like sticking it to the man. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. You shouldn't accept less than you're owed. But I mean, it does make sense in the grand scheme of the franchise. I think what you said is very true.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, he's not wrong for
asking what he's owed. I never said he was wrong.
Yeah, you're just playing devil's advocate here, maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
But see, this is actually, we'll throw to Justin. Justin, you go. What do you think?
Oh, boy.
Oh,
boy. Well, we know that Fury Road had a pretty tumultuous production.
Mm. Yes, that was delayed for
long-running and very stressful. But finally, when it came out, it was, you know, a lot of people would argue it was a masterpiece.
Yep.
I like to give a movie a couple of years before we start crowning stuff.
Like, but a fine wine. Just let it breathe.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
See if it stands the test. Up. Yeah, and I'm sure it will. Honestly, Mad Max Fury Road is a great action movie and one of the all-timers. I think that this is just going to be one of the steps in the long, like, production of the sequel. I feel like, to go back to your question of, is this the end of the franchise? I really don't think so. I think as long as George Miller is around and passionate about getting these projects completed, if there was going to be an end, it would have happened already. Like, enough obstacles have been thrown at this franchise.
That's a very good point.
So I feel like, you know, yes, this is like a very rough roadblock, but if there's anyone that can go through it, I think it's George Miller. And the guy's like in his 70s now, right? Like, he's old,
yeah.
Yeah, I hope it's the George R. R. Martin thing. It's like,
yeah,
guy's old. I hope we get there.
Let's just get there.
I hope we get there.
But I don't know if this is playing devil's advocate or not, because it's kind of like split a little bit.
It's
our
one
opinions
guy playing
here.
Devil's advocate, and that's me.
Yeah,
now,
that's me. Okay,
that's me, right.
But like you mentioned, Justin, there was like all this controversy surrounding like the initial production of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, is it safe to assume that there was obviously some beef between him and Warner Bros. There? I would say probably yes. So let's say there was some beef there. The movie finishes. You had an agreement. Okay, like, that was a rough production, Warner Bros. That was terrible. But we got through it. Look at the success. That's awesome. And I did it under budget. So how about that bonus? Oh, yeah, you know what? You don't deserve a bonus. So it's like, it seems like conflict after conflict jumping up. And do you want to continue working with a company that just gives you kind of headache after headache seemingly doesn't necessarily respect you kind of thing?
Money and success are the great equalizers. Like, you'd think Warner Brothers would just be thrilled that they had a major blockbuster that was also nominated for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a win.
Yeah, because that in itself should be a bonus.
Great DC movies.
That's right.
They have to pick and choose. Yeah, really, at this point,
Warner Brothers is like Oscar nominations. Have you seen Suicide Squad? We got that covered.
Yeah,
but yeah, just weird to me that Warner Brothers would try and alienate one of the filmmakers that has been driving their success lately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you look at their slate of movies from the last 10 years, I'm sure Fury Road is on a lot of people's like high up there in terms of their output.
Would have to be,
so why are you trying to just give the guy the money? It's not like you don't have it.
Also, it's tough for him to make another Mad Max movie considering that the rights belong to Warner Brothers.
Well, that's the thing. Exactly.
So even if he wants to continue this and say hey, Warner Brothers, get out of here. I'm out.
It's like, well, actually, here's another contract.
That's cool, man, if you want to leave. We're just going to keep all your stuff. And they would still make another Mad Max movie.
You're so right. They really would.
They would make one. And then if it doesn't do good, they'll be like, wow, George Miller left. Like, what do you want us to do? He screwed us.
Do you think they would make another one without him or just sell the rights?
No, they would make another one with
that. I think at this point, with the track record they've had in their big blockbusters that have been all disasters almost, I don't think they would make another one to try to capitalize on the name of Mad Max. But then I personally don't think Mad Max can exist without George Miller. It's such a character that he's evolved.
Yeah.
And he said that none of the movies are supposed to follow. They're just adventures.
Yeah.
So he just writes a fun movie that he goes, this is going to be great. And you know who would be great in this story? Mad Max, a character I created. You know, you look at all three movies, the original ones with Mel Gibson, they don't follow. They're just this guy, he gets into these problems.
Yeah.
And it happens. And he gets the end of it, and that's all. Somewhat of a happy ending for the people that Max has helped, but he's he hasn't had his happy ending.
Right.
Even in Fury Road, he's really just helping Furiosa, right? So
he's like a secondary character.
Yeah, he's like a secondary. So he's like, okay, I helped you. I'm out. Yeah, you have your water. Let's go.
I want to throw it to Phoebe. I want to throw it to Phoebe real quick. She laughed there, so I was just wondering why you were laughing.
Oh, no, I was just laughing because it was so poetic. He hasn't had his happy
She doesn't think
yet.
You have it in you, Manny. She's Manny's a poet?
That's why I was laughing.
Didn't know it.
I usually just spend all my time here yelling at everybody.
That's true. Yeah, for your listeners, he's actually usually our director. I mean, he is our director for a bunch of other projects, so he's a mean dude.
He's so mean.
So when you see him being poetic.
He didn't give me cookies.
You don't wear that hat without doing some yelling.
Okay, so just to wrap up, we all agree that this isn't the end of Mad Max.
Whether Miller's attached or not, Mad Max will go on at Warner Brothers.
It will go on, perfect. And so shall we. Those were the top three stories of the week. But we can only fit three in an episode, right? Or in the Cinephiles, anyways. So we're going to talk about some other stories that didn't make the original Cinephiles episode, and we're going to talk about that next. All right, welcome back to The Extended Cut. And if you want to check out the show as an audio podcast, we're on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Now it's time for the segment we like to call The Cutting Room Floor. These are the stories that didn't make the original episode, but we got to talk about them. We got to talk about them anyways because they're still good. They're still good.
Great stories.
They are. And we're going to start with the greatest one to not make the cut, but still a great one. I was going to say Benicio del Toro, but it's not Benicio del Toro. It's Guillermo del Toro.
Yay.
And it seems that the success post The Shape of Water is really ramping up for this guy. He recently signed a deal with Fox Searchlight, and he signed another one, this time with DreamWorks Animation. It's a deal that will see him not only produce, but direct some animated films. Pretty cool. What do we think about this?
Everybody looked at me.
We all looked at Phoebe because Phoebe loves Guillermo del Toro. Yeah.
Yes, I do. I'm really excited about this. I don't know if you guys have seen The Book of Life, which is an animated film which was produced by Guillermo del Toro. It's one of my favorite animated films of all time. It's just amazing, and it's all about Mexican culture, and it feels really authentic, which I think is just a testament to, his filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited for this. I think that del Toro's vision works really well as an animated sort of concept, and I feel like a lot of his films are sort of cartoonish just by nature.
Yeah.
So I think that it's going to be really, really interesting to see him translate his experience and his culture onto more films.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily that he has trouble achieving the set design he wants in his live actions, but it's just that much easier to animation,
right?
Yeah,
he can let his imagination run wild.
You guys excited? The boys?
Yeah. I'm pretty excited. I mean, this makes me think of Tim Burton and how he does his stop motion animation movies.
Cool.
And he goes full Tim Burton in them, and you believe it. And Guillermo del Toro goes full del Toro in his movies. So imagine he's given animation where he has no limits. So
right.
I think this is going to be something that's going to be pretty amazing to see.
Cool.
If
yeah,
not,
cool.
I don't see how this is a terrible idea. You know, it's like, oh,
yeah,
you're
no,
limited.
I would agree.
Yeah,
no,
that,
yeah.
The only thing that I could see happening that might be bad is if his movies are too terrifying for children. Like there
that's
are
so
some
funny.
There are some examples of that. Like I know Coraline is an example of like a kid's movie that like scarred a lot of kids just because it was so scary. Maybe Del Toro put some of his classic monsters in there and the kiddies are like, ah, this is too much for me, I can't.
What I think would have been interesting, just because, you know, DreamWorks sort of has this like framework of animation that isn't necessarily something that's like I'm obsessed with. Like I prefer the style of like Laika, which is like stop motion animation.
Yeah.
I think that that could have been really interesting because their films cater less to the family centric sort of vibe and more to like a creative, a little bit darker style like Tim Burton's films.
Yeah.
I think that that maybe would have been, for me, a little bit more interesting, but I'm still really excited. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, I love like Paranorman was awesome.
Paranorman.
Box Trolls
is
my favorite movie of all time.
Box Trolls is great too. But like Paranorman, when the first time I watched it, I was like, oh my God, this is like, it's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Like there are parts when I was like, man, kids would be terrified of this. So it's a very good point.
Yeah.
So that was the first story to not make it. There's another one. The Deadpool 2 director, David Leitch, is going to direct a video game movie. And they're they're known for being notoriously bad all the time. So do we think, two-part question. One, do we think it's going to be good? And two, it's going to star Jake Gyllenhaal and Jessica Chastain. So second question, is that cool? Do we like that?
I like those actors.
Me too.
The game that he is adapting is The Division, which is not a... Like, some people like it a lot. It had a bit of a tumultuous development process. Just briefly to catch you guys up to speed, they showed a demo of it at E3 one year. The demo looked awesome. The graphics were incredible. It was showing off all this cool stuff. The game came out, and everyone was like, this looks nothing like what you showed us. Everything looks way worse. What's going on? We were all so excited. And I think over time, it has developed, like, a fan base, and people have, like, kind of accepted it for what it was. But at first, people were kind of like... I was excited about this game, and it turns out it's nowhere near what I expected. It's a cool concept, kind of like, not post-apocalyptic, but like a city is like ravaged, and you gotta like, there's like people with guns and gangs, and it's kind of weird. It's all about scavenging and stuff like that. I think Jake Gyllenhaal is an interesting casting decision for something like this, since he did the Prince of Persia movie.
You think he'd learn, right?
And that wasn't good.
Unless he read the script and he was like, this is an amazing script.
Or
unless they're just like, here's a lot of money. Which, you know.
Hey, how's it going?
Maybe
blank the check.
So if you could just overlook the script and just take a look at this.
Add
here.
Some zeros here.
For you guys listening on the podcast, we're pretending to slip a lot of money towards them.
A lot of money.
Big wads.
Use your imagination.
Yeah.
Tons of money. But weird choice for Jakey over there. But Jessica Chastain doing more genre movies. She's going to be in the X-Men. Mm-hmm. She's going to be in this.
Yeah.
Interesting choice. Isn't
she also in It?
She is.
She's in It.
Yeah.
Wow.
Look at that.
I think this is classic case of like, are video game movies good? Are video games good to be adapted to movies, period? We had a time in the early 90s where it was like, here's a little bit of money, make a video game movie. Then we hit the early 2000s, and then we're like, okay, so here's a lot of money, because that's what you need to make a video game movie, is a lot of money. And then it was terrible. And then it's like, let's try it again with a lot of money, and then it didn't work, or it became campy fun. Now, a recent video game movie that came out is Tomb Raider with Lara Croft, which was overall an okay movie, but they put a really good actress in it to portray the main, and I feel like that worked for the movie. You believe that Alicia Vikander was Lara Croft, well, the new version of Lara Croft, so that kind of worked. So here we have a director who's worked on tiny action movies, and he just did Deadpool, which is a giant action movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you have Jake Gyllenhaal, who's worked on tiny movies and who's done massive budget movies. Then you have someone like Jessica Chastain, again. So I feel like
I think there's a connection here
They're trying to figure out that maybe we won't throw $200 million at this movie. Maybe we'll throw $100 million. And we'll break even at the box office. Because, I mean, if they could make 16 episodes of The Walking Dead in a post-apocalyptic world for, like, $80 million, I'm pretty sure they could give us a 90-minute movie based on a video game that hits the beats of the game and that executes well as a movie
right.
to create maybe a good franchise for these people to build off of.
Mm-hmm.
I think the possibility is there. But again, a video game is an experience, not a movie. So the story and the choices you make.
More poetry over here.
The choices
poetry
you make,
in motion.
The choices you make is how you experience that game.
Yeah.
And when you're writing a screenplay for that, it's that writer's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes the director's vision. Same thing with book movies. Everybody says the book is better. Some people say the movie's better. It's up to interpretation, really. I mean, like, where are you going to go with that?
I just like wonder why they keep insisting on making video game movies, because video games have like bigger budgets than like blockbuster films at this point. They're making like so much money. I just don't
yeah.
see why they have to, you know, put it into film. And when Eric and our beloved Dan did the review for Rampage, another video game movie,
yeah.
Dan
mm-hmm.
said very poetically, he said it's like translating something from English to Chinese and then back to English, because video games are based on other things and then you're going to adapt that for a screenplay.
Yeah.
I feel like it sort of gets lost in translation. I'm
yeah.
not like a huge gamer, but I mean, that's just my perspective.
Oh, it makes sense. I mean, I think they know that. I think they're basically like, oh, we know the script isn't going to be like super top notch, so that's why we have to get these big actors, because we know at least the reviews will be like, oh, these guys were great, and they kind of carry the story. But ultimately, you know, it might fall short, but at least we have these guys who can
yeah.
who can give it their all, kind of thing. So that's interesting. Okay, so that wraps up our little cutting room floor segment. We're going to jump into the new releases real quick here, guys. I Feel Pretty, starring...
Amy Schumer.
It's not getting very good reviews, but that's coming out this week. Is anyone going to be rushing out to see that?
No. Interesting to note, though, that this movie was meant to come out next week on the 27th of April, but when Infinity War pulled their stunt of, hey, we're releasing it a week early, the people over at the I Feel Pretty camp were like, us too. We're moving up too.
Yeah, yeah. Our movie's done as well.
Same. Yes.
Yeah.
Same. We're not competing with Marvel. So that was a smart decision. Hopefully
that
makes a dent. But yeah, no. It's
or everybody could say, you know, we could go to the movies now and see I Feel Pretty, or we can go next week and watch Avengers Infinity War.
I think I'm on that train. Yeah.
If you're an Amy Schumer fan, you're going to go see the movie.
Who is an Amy Schumer fan?
They're out there.
I think the movie looks funny. I'm not an Amy Schumer fan, but I think like there was a lot of controversy surrounding it because, you know, Amy Schumer is like a cisgendered white woman, and in the film she's portraying someone who like experiences like a lot of self-consciousness, and she doesn't
yeah.
feel pretty and whatever, and people were like, well, why don't you feel pretty? You're like normal, you know, like you're normal. And I don't agree with that controversy, because I don't think that you have to be like, you know, completely horrendous looking to feel insecure about yourself. So I'm interested to see sort of how they handle that, because
mm-hmm.
I know that it was like a huge conversation online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the story the movie tries to portray itself, like I can get on board with that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
the movie itself just does
yeah,
not
it's like
look...
a shitty, shallow Hal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shitty,
yeah.
Shallow Hal. Remember Shallow Hal?
That's such
oh,
a
yeah.
good movie.
Oh,
that's
man.
Like the best movie ever.
But
however,
yeah, I'm not sold. And I'm not a huge Amy Schumer fan. And I feel, I don't know.
I think she's funny when she plays a secondary character
yeah.
in a movie. Like she could be like, she could be really funny in that, like bouncing off another,
yeah.
I'm going to get heat for this, more talented comedian. I think
right.
it works.
Yeah.
For her headlining films, I mean, Trainwreck was great, but she was also working with
Bill
Hader.
Yeah,
and
Judd Apatow.
And Judd Apatow.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, like give her stuff that she's good at and she'll be good, pretty
yeah.
much. Like,
yeah.
makes sense. Like, I'm not going to tell a painter to build a fence, you know. We'll tell
That's
him to
fair.
Build, paint the fence.
That's fair. It's weird. I've actually read some, interviews, or not interviews, articles saying, like, this is basically Amy Schumer's last chance to be, like a leading
star.
A-list film star. Do you think that's a fair kind of argument?
I think people are so sick of her at this point, like, just sort of inserting herself into the pop culture conversation.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, people just really, really don't like her. And I don't think that it will ever be that way for her to be like, you know, a leading lady in comedy. I don't think that she has the chops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
The next film to be a new release, Phoebe, you've seen it, Super Troopers 2. a sequel to Super Troopers. How old? That movie's like, what, 10 years old?
It's actually 16 or 17 years old.
Oh, my God. Really?
It came out in 2001. What year are we? Yeah, it's 17 years old.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
I had to sneak into the theater because I think it was like here in Quebec, it was like PG-16. And I wasn't old enough. Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, Manny is 67 years old, so that's a long time ago. That's crazy. I had no idea it was that old. See,
yeah, it's
that,
really old.
That passes like the statues of limitation. No, like that's like. Well, that's does anyone why, care like, about a sequel when, that comes out that when, long after?
When we did our review, we sort of spoke to like Zoolander 2, you know, Dumb and Dumber 2, and you know, the Anchorman sequel.
How dare you?
And we said no. But what I'm saying is like I feel like this movie works because it was like. A cult thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't like an amazing comedy movie. Like I would say Anchorman is like a classic comedy movie.
Right.
And I guess like the bar just sort of passes for those kinds of films because comedy is changing all the time. And I think that the reason that Super Troopers 2 will work for people who liked Super Troopers, it's because it's almost the exact same humor. It feels like a 90s movie. And I think that people are going to like that, you know?
It's got kind of like the nostalgia factor in there.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think if you make people watch both trailers of I Feel Pretty and Super Troopers, they're both kind of meh comedies, but people lean towards one more than the other. So
yeah.
It really comes down to you feel like laughing about funny girl comedy stuff or you feel like laughing about stoner stuff. Like, how's your comedy feeling this weekend? That's my review at a box office.
Justin?
Meh.
He shrugged. Meh, that's it.
Whatever.
Shrugs. Yeah, that's kind of how I feel.
This trailer, I watched the trailer and it just kind of like washed over me. Like I was just like, yeah, that's definitely a movie. Yeah. It's for sure a motion picture.
It's fun to play up stereotypes, but when like your whole script, I feel like the whole script is just playing the stereotypes. It's like, okay, we get it. Yeah. Canadians, you know, Mounties, haha.
That was funny. My issue with it was that it was like, I don't care. I don't get offended by that. Like some people would think that was offensive. It's not because I'm Canadian, by the way. it's like it was tiresome because it was like so over the top. And it was like, okay, it's like it's not like it's so funny that you would bank your whole movie on how funny it is because it's just not that funny.
Right.
But there were some good moments.
Is that a thumbs up from Phoebe?
It's like, sideways? It's like this. It's sideways.
It's sideways. It's undecided. Sideways. It's like 50-50. All right. So I think most of the panel here isn't going to see Super Troopers 2. We probably won't see I Feel Pretty. I don't know.
I might catch up with something older if I end up at
the theater. If you have 15 bucks.
Anchorman.
Anchorman.
Yeah, let's just watch Anchorman right now.
So if you have 15 bucks to waste, you could rent three really good movies buy a Blu-ray.
Yeah. So we're not going to see these, but I mean, if you guys want to, feel free. Those were the new releases, and I think that just about wraps up the show, guys. So thanks so much for checking out the Cinephiles Extended Cut, and be sure to subscribe to Mojo Talks. You can also find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. So for me, Justin, Phoebe, and special guest Manny, guys, thanks a lot for listening, and until next time. Thanks for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe to our Mojo Talks YouTube channel for the video version of the Cinephiles Extended Cut.